and gentlemen, welcome to the June 2nd, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have electronic devices, would you be kind enough to silence them for the meeting? Remind folks that we have exits to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. I wondered if you would please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Call for the roll call of members, please.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein has also asked to be excused. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Clairborn?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
11 members are present.
We have a quorum. I'm not anticipating having an executive session tonight. I may reorder business a little if there's a motion to reconsider the resolution from last meeting. Let's go to presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. Very pleased tonight to ask John Hopper to come forward. He is our poet laureate, and I think he's going to make a presentation for us. John, please.
All right. Hello. Dr. Blake, members of the legislature.
You need to get the microphone up and pointed right at you.
There. Can you hear me?
That's better.
Okay. Yes, thanks again for enduring me. I only have 10 poems tonight. No, that's a joke. I've learned a few things since I was here last month and a half or so ago, March, about the poet laureate, the very office, just here in the state of New York. I ran into somebody who was the poet laureate of Broome County, now taking his degree at Binghamton. He was the first and last, and then they just canceled it. Far too costly, I suppose. I also found out that in the great city of New York itself, five boroughs, only two have a poet laureate, Brooklyn and Queens. Amazing, with their millions. And here's little Tompkins County. Seriously, you know, we have a right to cheer. It's been a busy time. When spring bursts here, things really happen. And it's been a busy time for me, and I really have fallen into the work. I've really come to enjoy it. I'm going to read one poem here, which you'll understand by the time I get to the end of it, called Camouflage Portrait. In the photograph, a young man in combat uniform stands tall, holding an M16 assault rifle, its muzzle pointed down. The gloved right hand holds the weapon's grip in a lethal blur, fault of movement where the camera. The left hand's open palm cradles the barrel like an offering. He wears a helmet, goggles, and around his throat and chin a neckerchief or mask. His full mouth down at the edges, neither challenging nor friendly. Insignias announce paratrooper, ranger. On his knees, protective guards. Combat boots complete the portrait, except for the footwear showing under the bed. Flip-flops, sneakers, dress shoes, highly polished for inspections. All this is a camouflage uniform the camera was first to capture. And the message accompanying the photo, ready for Syria, signed, your son. Real story. But he's back from Afghanistan safely, so... Just one more short one, because you folks have business here, too. This is called The Mechanics of Sleep. has to do with an old couple. I was part of it. If I turn left, I'm facing her, front or back. If I turn right, there's the door we men have been guarding since the cave. My back's to her now, whom I trust awake or asleep. The two of us in our ruts, worn as wheels.
Let me just say, John, thank you very much. I'm going to turn to Carol in just a second, but please come back often. Please. Carol.
Wait, don't sit down yet. I'm going to just ask, because we pay you such big bucks, is there some place that people can go and see more of your poems or order books, should they be so inclined?
Yes.
The book is for sale at the Buffalo Street Books, and it's available, I think, still at Amazon. But any bookstore will order it, even if they don't carry it. It is serviced around the world, supposedly, so, yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And thanks for coming. We enjoy it.
Next, we'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. If you want to speak to us, we ask that you please sign one of the blue cards and hand it up to us. We have some blue cards already. When you sign the blue card, you're agreeing to our rules for privilege of the floor. You're agreeing to a 3-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or lifelong libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. We do have a countdown clock on the screen at the front of the room. At the end of the 3 minutes, there will be an audible signal. If you're still talking, we ask that you please conclude at that point. The first card I have tonight is Bernie Federle. Could you please come to a microphone and state your name and your municipality, please?
Hi. I'm Bernie Federle from Tompkins County Healthcare Task Force. And what I want to talk about is on the healthcare, single-payer healthcare. If anybody is for, no, I am a single-payer healthcare. I am for a single-payer healthcare plan, and I am for the single-payer healthcare resolution at Tompkins. If anybody is for or against the Affordable Care Act for political reasons, they are probably going to mislead the general public. The ACA cannot work and is bound to fail and is failing. The ACA has financial barriers to access to health care, and 31 million people will still be uninsured in 2019. The ACA is a multi-payer plan that splits the risk pool that only a single-payer plan can utilize. The ACA does nothing to control costs, and the costs are increasing substantially again. People cannot afford the ACA with its high deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance, and its low actuarial values and benefits. Under the ACA, we have an epidemic of underinsured people. Employers are dumping the cost of health care coverage onto their employees. The ACA cannot work because it's mainly a for-profit health care system, and a for-profit healthcare system is prone to adverse selection, where the sick would gladly sign up and the wealthy and the healthy may not. We need a single-payer system with its one risk pool where everybody is covered. New York State Assembly just passed a single-payer healthcare plan, and now we take it to the New York State Senate. We are off to a great start and a $45 billion savings. This is the reasons why you should support this resolution and go for a single-payer health care plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Rebecca Elgie.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Elgie and live in the city of Ithaca.
Can you point that down a little bit more?
A little more? Okay. Better?
Yes.
Thanks. We are here to speak about the resolution in support of the New York Health Act, which, as Bernie says, just passed the Assembly, 92-52, which is the final count, a little different than was in the paper. And I just wanted to outline a few of the things that we would achieve through having this health plan. We'd have freedom to choose your health care providers with no network restrictions or limitations on where you can go. Even with this being a New York State plan, you would be able to go out of the state to a specialist or a special clinic if it was deemed necessary. It would give all New Yorkers comprehensive coverage regardless of your age and your employment status, and it would cover all medically necessary services, including primary, preventive, specialists, hospital, and mental health. It would include health care for reproductive health care, dental and vision, and prescription drug coverage. It would also include medical supplies and would provide everyone with a very comprehensive plan. And there's been some concern about unions, but the unions are really coming forth in support of this because they're beginning to realize that as the taxes go into effect in 2016, on the so-called Cadillac plans, that they are going to start seeing their coverage infringed upon. So they are supporting this bill and have been helping to fund the campaign to promote it. And it would be paid through comprehensive progressive taxes. Under the New York Health Plan, individuals and employers would not pay premiums or deductibles or copays. Instead, it would be funded through a graduated assessment on payroll and non-payroll taxable income based on ability to pay, so that 98% of New Yorkers will see a substantial reduction in what they spend. And we had an analytic economic study of the health plan, and we would save $45 billion in the first year of it in starting 2019. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak? I don't have any other cards. We need a card. Not seeing anyone. We say thank you, and I'm not seeing any municipal official. Am I wrong? Who may want to speak on municipal privilege of the floor? So let's move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Would anyone like to speak tonight? I guess not, so we'll move right along. Any hands?
Nice. Keep going.
Oh, I'm still not seeing any hands.
Keep going.
All right, we'll move right along. Next, we have a special presentation tonight. Pleased to invite Monica Roth from Cornell Cooperative Extension here to talk to us about Farmland Protection Plan. Monica, welcome.
Thank you.
I think you need the screen, so we'll suspend while we put the screens down.
So is the mic okay? Can't tell when I'm sitting on top of it. Okay. So I'm Monica Roth. Very high tech. Cool.
There, thank you, Monica. Could you proceed?
Great. Everyone gets to see it. So, yes, I'm Monica Roth. I'm the agriculture program leader for Cornell Cooperative Extension at Tompkins County. And I'm here as the elected official, I guess, from the Ag and Farmland Protection Board to present a quick overview of the 2015 Tompkins County Ag and Farmland Protection Plan that we've been working on for about a year.
Can we dim the lights?
Let's see why it isn't moving. Yeah. There we go. So and double-check the time. The plan, the impetus for the plan is essentially from New York State. The Ag District Law has provided, through the Ag District Law, there's been funding to municipalities to develop farmland protection plans. It's in the state's interest to preserve farmland, and so that's really where it comes from. So in 1996, we received our first grant to develop a county plan and are in the process of updating that plan now. But in doing the plan, it really gives us a chance to review what's going on in agriculture, to understand, you know, what the scope of the industry is, what some of the challenges are, and also look for opportunities, how we can strengthen our agriculture industry. And in that vein, too, there is funding, obviously, that we can help channel towards our farm community to help grow the industry, too. Overall, once we get a plan done, it really guides the actions of the Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board and the partners like Cooperative Extension or the Soil and Water District in carrying out the actions in the plan. So, here. Get the right button. So, again, I mentioned that our first plan, we started in 1996. We had a grant. We kind of had two parts. The first part was data analysis, and we conducted a cost of community services study. And then the plan with the strategies was adopted in 1998. And at that time, we had three basic goal areas. One was policy and land use that was supportive of agriculture, economic development, and ag awareness and education. We've since then, there have been some additional studies related to agriculture that the county planning department has been involved in. We did a countywide PDR, purchase of development rights feasibility study for agriculture in 2002. That study actually was the basis for the mapping that was done as part of the comprehensive plan in 2004. And the priority areas for farmland protection were identified at that point as part, they're identified as ARFAs, ag resource focus areas. Those are areas where there's prime soil and a high level of agriculture activity. And then we, through planning, submitted a grant to update the ag plan, and that is what we've been working on. And the new census data was available in May 2014. The ag census is done every 5 years, so that gave us opportunity to look at the trends with more current data. These are the Ag and Farmland Protection Board members. There's farmer members and other voting members that represent agency and sector interests. Dave McKenna is the legislative member from the county board. The plan process that we've been following is essentially to look at the data in the agriculture census plus other data we have access to. We've had about four kind of general farmer public meetings and a bunch of about eight focus group meetings with different sectors of the agriculture industry. So we've gotten a lot of farmer input. We have six theme areas in this plan, focused on economic development again. Local foods, obviously, is an important component of economic development. Future farmers and looking at the age of farmers and who will farm in the future. And land use policy again, environment, and ag awareness and education. So those are the goal areas, and we have strategies and priorities that have been set for each of those areas. So I'll quickly run down through the data. This is in the plan. The plan's a big document at this point, so this is a few of the highlights. You can see that the farm numbers in the county since 1978 have stayed pretty stable. Little fluctuations, but really from a statistician perspective, those would be considered insignificant. So we have, theoretically, according to the census, we have 558 farms. Our farm acreage is going down a little because we have an increase in small farms. And also because some of the acreage that is in production is higher yielding land, better quality land, so there's less cropland in production, which you can see on the slide too as a trend. And so that's a little bit of the trends. The way the numbers of farms break out by size, as we can see, we have tons in that bottom end of the scale under 50 acres. So lots of small farms, but trending to a few more bigger farms. We're losing in the mid-range, which I think is part of a national trend, in the 260 to 500 acre. We're losing a little bit of ground there. So it's, you know, we're seeing a little bit of that bimodal agriculture where you have big farms and small farms, a lot of small farms. This kind of gives you another way of looking at that data. 85% of the farms in the county would be considered small farms. So by USDA definition, actually, any farm with under 250,000 in sales is considered a small farm. And then that small farm category can be broken further into, you know, lifestyle farms, retirement farms. And we do have quite a few of those types of farms in our county, including limited resource farms, so those that just are not making a lot of money from farming. So that's a little bit of the data. Of the 558 farms, you can see that about half of those people consider themselves as full-time farmers, so about 51% or 280 or so people. As far as Tompkins County and the rest of the region, we're kind of steady, as I said, in terms of the numbers of farms. Some of our surrounding counties are losing farms significantly. Schuyler and Seneca have increased, obviously, because of the grape industry and also because of the Mennonite and Amish farms.
Are we losing farms like in Cayuga, where it's down 12%, or are they consolidating?
A lot of consolidation, yes, especially among the dairy industry.
We're
not losing farmland. We might be losing farm numbers, but we're not losing farmland. So this is actually shows the land in farms we have. I lied. We have lost a little. But there is a little bit of a drop. But as I said, some of that is because we're concentrating on some of the better soils. But, you know, so we're kind of in the middle in terms of loss of farmland. But, again, land use, land cover data shows that some of our inactive ag land has gone back into production in recent years, too. So we're glad to see that. So in terms of the market value, the value of the industry, $67 million total in ag sales in the county. Of that, dairy makes up the largest percentage, $38 million just in dairy alone. That's milk sales from our dairy farms. That's kind of historical, too. We've had, you know, dairy has always been like at least half of the total ag value of sales in Tompkins County. But we are seeing some growth in some other areas. Certainly our vegetable and fruit industry has been growing over the last years. And, you know, a few of the others would be like the hort industry, and then odds and ends of a little small-scale diversified farming operations. So, again, this is kind of shows you the farms by type and the change over time. So the decrease, there's not as much wheat grown, but, you know, that has more to do with the market, more soybeans, more vegetables, a significant increase in vegetables and berries and fruits. Again, that shows the strength of our local food movement, more people producing for local markets, fewer cattle, lots more poultry, but they're all in very small units. Most of our poultry is in tiny farms. So even though we have 71 farms compared to 92, they're like micro farms, including some in the city, I hear. So anyhow, we also are losing in hogs, but I bet we'll see that change because of, again, local meat demand and a little bit of growth in the sheep area. So the age of farmers is continuing to increase, but we really have a feeling that the census data doesn't capture the accurate number because it's generally the senior generation that fills out the forms. And we know just from being out on the farms that we see lots of young people coming into agriculture. So I don't think this tells an accurate story. Again, trying to look at you know, how many new farms do we have? What's the growth of new farms? It looks like farms under 10 years, we have about 15% of those farms that are out there are under 10 years in business. So we do have a very active beginning farmer community, and we have been working with those people pretty intensively in helping them with business planning and marketing. So some of the state requirements for the plans, they want to know what areas do we want to protect, what's the value of those areas, and what are some of the strategies we're going to be using to protect agriculture and promote agriculture, and especially they're interested in economic development. The areas to protect, our committee, the board, Ag and Farmland Board, basically feels that we have a pretty good, well-defined ag district program in Tompkins County. We have two districts, the one on the east and the west side of the county, encompasses most of the ag land. So the slide on your right, left, on your left, shows the ag district. The slide on your right shows those properties that receive agricultural assessment, both owned and rented properties. And so it kind of corresponds that the active ag land is in the ag districts. You can see how closely those maps line up. We have been working for many years to make sure that the farmers who, you know, are actively farming are, in fact, in an agriculture district. And every 8 years, we review the district and kind of go through the process of updating as need be. So we have created a vision for the plan, which is basically that we want to see the continuation of diverse agriculture that contributes both local food and ag products, and that should result in employment and economic activity. We want to be able to see our farmers continue to flourish in the future, and so that means both established farmers being able to transition their businesses to either their own family members or you know, new farmers who might want to get into farming. We hope that farmers follow sound ag practices that benefit the environment, and also that consumers and policymakers can have value the contributions of agriculture and enact supportive policies that allow farming to continue. So these are the six priority areas that I mentioned before, agriculture, economic development. Each of these priority areas has, actually, we started with a list of well over 100 of ideas that farmers had shared with us in terms of needs. So we kind of pared them down to what we thought was the most important through a prioritization process that the farmers were involved in on the Ag Board. So economic development is important. Farmers seem to want to be better linked with business and marketing information and resources. One idea that seemed to come up over and over again is just having a website, one place they can go to for information, because it's constantly changing in terms of what funding is available, et cetera. And obviously the county is working on agritourism strategy, agriculinary tourism strategy, and that's one area that we feel like has potential as a growth area for agriculture in Tompkins County. Also our local food system, continuing to work on both on the consumer side, encouraging more consumption of local foods, working with buyers, and also expanding the marketing and infrastructure needs to be able to continue to support a active local food system, which we do have. I've been collecting a lot of data about our local food system, and I think this is a number that whenever I talk to anybody from outside the area, I've done a study that looks at what percent of fruits and vegetables are consumed locally, you know, by our Tompkins County population, and 20% of our fruits and vegetables come from local sources, which is huge because nationally it's like maybe 2%. So I'm very proud that we have good local food consumers, and we need more. Anyhow, so farmland protection, land use policy. One of the issues that kind of kept up a lot, kept coming up a lot, was the need for continuing work with municipal officials for them to understand the ag district law and the provisions of that law, and so that local zoning and the ag district law are compatible and allow the continuation of farming in the towns. And also along with that, we do feel like farmers should be involved at a local level, working on town boards or planning boards in order to have some influence on local land use policy. A number of towns have developed town ag and farmland protection plans, the town of Ulysses, the town of Ithaca, and also I'm like this close to finishing the town of Lansing plan, and we are just starting to work with the town of Dryden. So we will have four towns that have their own ag and farmland protection plans. And obviously we've been successful in obtaining state funding for PDR to protect farmland in our county, and we hope that there'll be another round of funding that we can add more farms to that list. So environment, obviously encouraging sustainable farming practices, looking at the impact of invasive species and climate change, energy opportunities for farms, I think is still almost an untapped area, and that also obviously has economic development implications for farming. And then there are obviously regional plans like the Cleaner Greener plan that we want to make sure that we're linking to in that regard. Ag awareness, there's many ways that we need to work on getting the word out about agriculture, hosting tours through the media, and also educating our teachers and youth. And then the future workforce that kind of goes together with ag awareness is the needs are in the area of transitioning farms to the next generation or to a new farmer. We've been working with beginning farmers, educating youth, and you know, again, with the TC3 program, we have another opportunity in our community to foster this kind of training. And the other thing that the beginning farmers are telling us, they're getting to a point where they're wanting to hire people. So they, too, are looking for training on how to become an employer, which is exciting. It means our beginning farmers are creating jobs. So, or newer farmers, I should say. So in terms of completion of the plan, we have been getting input through the Planning Environmental Quality Committee. Probably didn't get that right, but Planning Advisory Board. We wanted to come to you to give you an overview, and obviously been getting monthly input from the Ag and Farmland Protection Board. We are going to be holding a public information hearing on June 10th at the library, 6 to 8, and we put the word out, we'd love it. Sorry, I'm thirsty. We hope to, sorry, my throat lost its whatever. Anyhow, we hope that you'll also help get the word out. We will be continuing to edit the plan all the way through the public hearing, and whatever input we get there, it will be reflected in the plan. Oh, thanks. And then the Ag and Farmland Board has to officially approve it. You guys have to officially adopt it. And then Ag and Markets has the final approval at the state level. We have sent it to Ag and Markets, and they've already given us feedback. They like it. They said it's hefty, which I apologize. I know you guys are going to say the same thing if you try to read it. Anyhow. It's got a lot of data, so if you want to skip the data, just go to the strategy section and focus on that. So again, the full plan can be found on the county website, and if you have questions, you can contact me at Cooperative Extension.
Thank you, Monica.
Okay, that's it.
Do we have questions for Monica? Will, go ahead.
Monica, what is a lifestyle farm?
Well, it's someone who really isn't in it for making money. You know, they're really just, they're farming, but it's not, money, making money isn't important, so.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Monica, would you anticipate coming back to the legislature here for approval?
Well, we have, I guess it's up to you. There's a public hearing on July 7th, and so you can approve, if you feel like, you know, it's ready to approve, then you can approve it. And sometimes they, you know, you could approve it that night, but you might not want to. I would say sometime in July would be great if you feel like you're ready to approve it. So. And, you know, again, it's a working document that the Ag and Farmland Board will then take as its work plan and continue to prioritize and over hopefully maybe a 10-year life of the plan accomplish a lot that's in it.
One other minor question I had. Thinking of small farms, how do we define a farm? Is it based on agricultural exemption, or how do we do that?
Well, there's no real definition. The census actually uses $1,000 in sales. It is based on sales. You have to have sales. So that's the first criteria, is that there's got to be sales. And in the census, it's anybody with $1,000 in sales. New York State, for agriculture assessment purposes, it's $10,000 to qualify for agricultural assessment. So, you know, somewhere I'd say 10,000 would be a real threshold, perhaps, because those people are more seriously farming. And but full-time farming, you know, you're not really making a living farming unless you're at least in the 40,000 range, but generally 100,000.
Thank you. Martha?
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Monica. A couple questions on the purchase of development rights program. What's the timeline for new applications, or should, is it sort of people just contact you whenever?
We just received an announcement that there's a meeting coming up, right, and in July. So we assume that sometime after that there will be an announcement. Right, Scott, is that what you're thinking?
Okay, and how many farms do we have using PDR in the county?
Do you remember off the top of your head? I should have looked that number. Seven.
Seven?
We have six currently. It's about 2,500 acres in the county.
That's Scott Doyle from our planning department. Thank you, Scott.
And that number of 20% of our fruits and vegetables come from local sources. That's great. Does that have anything to do with CSAs? Is there a big increase in CSAs?
Well, yes, to some extent, but not entirely. It's also, that number that includes anybody selling through Green Star, locally through Green Star, anybody selling through restaurants, anyone selling to farmers markets throughout the county, and CSAs. So CSAs, we have about 10,000 households, or 10,000 people consuming food through CSAs, 4,300 households, sorry, get my numbers right.
Thank you.
10% of the population has, you know, eating food from local farms through CSA.
Okay, anything else? Monica, thank you for that presentation.
Okay.
I know how hard that all the folks have been working on this. I can remember the original one back in 96, so
yes,
it's nice to know it's being updated.
Yes, it needed to be updated. Thanks.
We'll suspend while we put the screens up. Okay. Chair's report, I have two things I wanted to mention. One that went down to Binghamton last week to the Regional Economic Development Council meeting, and they're beginning to roll out the two grant programs, the consolidated financial funding applications and the URI. That's the $1.5 billion competition among seven regions for three grants. I think Martha will probably speak more about that on her report, because we had a workshop here about that. But I wanted to mention that that's moving forward. If there are people who want to make applications through this consolidated process, we want them to get moving, because we want to make the deadline, that there is a drop-dead date, which Martha will probably tell you, and they won't accept them after that date. The other thing I wanted to mention was I was pleased to attend the, I guess, three things I want to mention tonight. Second one I want to mention is I attended the Tompkins County Magistrates Association meeting last Friday night, and it was very nice. They do that annually. They invite folks to that from judges and district attorneys, lawyers, and other people, and talk about topics of interest to local judges. We like to see the local judges working together. They called me up and wanted to present something to me as chair of the legislature, and what they gave me, they told me, was because it was such a challenging job to lead this group that they thought this would be helpful. And it's a game, and it's called the Challenge of the Zodiac. So I think they're telling me that before we move forward on various things that we do, we ought to consult the stars. And the last thing I wanted to mention was that I was pleased on a perfectly gorgeous night last Thursday night, to march with our Tompkins County contingent in the Ithaca Festival Parade. It was a fabulous evening, fabulous crowd of people that came out. It was pretty nice, and thanks to our departments, solid waste and airport, and everyone else that put together a small float and marched with us. Some in costume. It made us proud to be part of Tompkins County.
To Marcia for organizing it.
Oh, and I have some. I do have a couple of appointments to the Workforce Development Board. Brian Allen and Kevin Kersey. Turn to the reports by the county administrator, Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Michael. I have a few items of business here, and when I conclude those, I'd like to ask the legislature for a motion of confirmation on a personnel commissioner. So I will hold the best for last and get through some of the more routine business before we do that. I wanted you to know that we met our deadline of yesterday to file a government efficiency plan, which is the part of the property tax freeze law that we're obligated to do if we want taxpayers within the county to get a tax rebate on property tax increases above the prior year, again, under the new tax freeze plan. I've kind of garbled that, but there, under the tax freeze plan, we have to meet two tests in the future. One is that we have to keep our tax levy within the cap. The second is we have to file a government efficiency plan showing that we will achieve savings that are equivalent to 1% of our property tax levy over the period 2017 to 2019. So that's better put. We had to file that plan yesterday, and we did. Our plan was a countywide plan. It encompassed every municipality within the county. So the county did a lot of the heavy lift for all of the municipalities within the county, but it was a shared savings in that we really packaged many of the health savings that have gone along with being in the consortium, having the consortium put out a new plan. The Platinum Plan was a consortium plan. Having allowed different copay plans and having gone through or going through right now a dependent eligibility verification approach, all designed to save money for the taxpayers. And when you bundle those together, the savings averaged over that three-year period $1.7 million a year, which is almost 2% of the combined levies of every local government within Tompkins County. So we did what we were obligated to do under the tax freeze, and we submitted a report yesterday with those numbers in it. As we've been saying from the very beginning, this is an unfair picture of what has happened in this county for many years. You recall that the governor and folks in Albany wanted the tax freeze to be the impetus for savings through mergers, consolidations, shared services, and efficiencies. We presented efficiencies. So in allowing and looking only at things that have happened since 2012, it ignored everything that happened before 2012, which in this community is a heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. So we have been preparing. We've been working with the Shared Services Committee of TCOG to prepare a document that we can present to the community that will be called something like the rest of the story. And we'll document, through the help of some really bright students at Cornell's Johnson School of Business and also the Cornell Institute of Public Affairs, we'll document savings that we can associate with just a few of the major things that have been done in this community over the past several years. The big things like TCAT, like the 911 center, like centralized assessment. There are several others that aren't coming to mind right now, but we bundled these together. And in doing that, we can show that measured very conservatively, some of the people who contributed input to this believe too conservatively, but measured very conservatively, just a few of these major shared services and consolidations are saving right now $3.8 million every year in Tompkins County. And Paula has been working on a document that will bundle the Cornell report into basically a report to the community that will lay out the facts and figures that will provide important context to the state report that we filed yesterday. And I think it's a really important message that we're sending to the community, that we have not been complacent. If anything, we've been ahead of the curve. And in not recognizing what has been done since 2012, the state really does a disservice to places like ours that have been innovators. And so our goal is to correct the record and get a document out that, people can understand and get an appreciation for what's been done, and do it in a way that will include the TCOG community. So the governments who are involved in TCOG will have an opportunity to talk about their perspective on what has been done. I think it will be circulated as early as tomorrow to you and some other municipal officials, and we're looking for some kind of a public event over the course of the next week or two. So all that is coming, and I really have to thank a lot of people for a lot of effort to get us to this point. In the same spirit as that, when the tax freeze was first proposed, I think it was Mike's suggestion that TCOG take the lead in looking at shared services that we might add to that list of things that we've already done. And that committee has been working over the past year to identify things, and I've tried to keep you on top of what's going on a variety of fronts. The most recent development is that we have now formed the task force to look at municipal courts to see if through a structural realignment, which is what the state would like us to do, of the municipal court system, there can be improvements in either cost or the consistency of quality within the courts if there are alignments in that system. The task force has now been put together. I'm going to tell you who is on that group, and I think you'll find it to be very high level. Ray Schlatter, Jason Leifer, Judges Galbraith from Cayuga Heights, and Poole from Enfield, Gwen Wilkinson, Mark Solomon, who will represent the assigned counsel program, Lisa Smith, who's special counsel to the 6th Judicial District, and public officials from the towns, Marianne Sumner and Liz Thomas. So a fairly high-level group, very high-level group, who will take a look at this interesting issue over the next 6 to 8 months and report back their findings. They'll start next week. So that's an important step forward there. In the same vein as the consortium done, Barbara will be here, I think, next to your next meeting.
Yes.
To give you an update on the consortium. We haven't talked about the consortium for a while. And with the release of their annual report, there's good data now to talk about and document not only how well it's functioning, but also how much it's saving for local taxpayers every day that it exists. Other items on my list, I think Martha is going to talk about TCAD, Energy and Economic Development Task Force. And just a couple of more things. Tonight you'll consider the targets, spending targets for 2016. With that, if you approve that, the work on the budget will begin in earnest. Departments will get their targets. They'll work on their budgets through July. It'll come to my office, and we'll work on it through August. And you will be presented the budget on September 1st. So that's the timeline that we will follow over the course of the summer. You will get it very early in September this year. And the last item on my list before the confirmation request is the fun stuff. Airport Day is on June 21st. It's pretty cool. I think all like what's happening at the airport. They're being very inviting to the community, including this day, which will have a variety of events, including a 5K run on the runway. And if there's any kind of a motivator for speed and good time, it's like a 70-seater regional jet that's coming in on you to encourage you along. So that's on June 21st, and there'll be lots of materials available on that. So with that, if there aren't any questions on the ordinary business.
Questions for Joe? Carol?
Well, it's not quite a question, but I'm sitting here thinking about the name. You mentioned, I want to thank you for spearheading the shared services effort and report. That's going to be really useful to have. It's not going to change the governor's mind. It just so rankles. But there used to be an organization here, old-timers will remember, the Rest of the News. So Rest of the News, shared services. And then I also have a suggestion on the, as you move into the effort on the municipal courts, you could call it Zodiac.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
I look forward
would you
to
like
that
to,
one, too.
I would. Introduce our potential new planning, or rather, personnel commission.
I would. So I'm here tonight to ask for your confirmation of my appointment of Amy Wilson-Guerreri to the position of Commissioner of Personnel. And in conjunction with that appointment, also ask for a second motion that will establish a six-year term, appoint her to a six-year term, which is required by both charter and by state law. Before we do this, we always ask if anybody would like to adjourn to an executive session. It is a personnel matter, so if anybody would like to adjourn to special session, executive session.
Is there any request for an executive session tonight? Not seeing any. Joe, please
Great.
Proceed.
Okay. Let me provide you a bit of background on Amy. First, her appointment is the culmination of a national search process and two interviews. It was guided by a search committee that included representatives of the legislature, of each of our departmental cabinets, the head of the CSEA White Collar Union, the county attorney, the deputy county administrator, me, along with the city's HR director, Shelley Michelle Nunn, and TC3's HR director, Sharon Dover. And Amy, who's here with us tonight, made it through that gauntlet. She comes to us from Yates County, where she's been the personnel director since 2012. For 8 years before that, she was with the 9,000-person Rochester General Health System, where she served as a talent acquisition recruiter. That's something that we found intriguing, given the fact that we really want to focus on succession planning and diversifying our workforce. So that skill in recruiting is really, we found, very important to the consideration. She was also involved in a number of other management responsibilities with that health system. Before that, she was in senior management at the Geneva Housing Authority. And if you don't think she's tough enough for this job, she also served in the United States Army for 4 years back in the 1980s, which probably prepares her well for this job. The search committee, and I agree with them, believe that Amy can continue to move us forward in all areas of HR, including our desire to be known as an employer of choice. So she is here with us tonight, and subject to your confirmation, plans to start on June 22nd. So, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a motion of confirmation, and again, I'll ask for a second motion for the appointment to the six-year term.
Jim Dennis, chair of our personnel committee.
As a member of the committee that Joe spoke of, I would gladly move Amy's appointment to the job of personnel commissioner in Tompkins County.
Thank you. A second, and I think I saw Glenn Morey's hand.
Second.
Go ahead.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Looks unanimous to me.
Very good. And if we could have a second motion on the appointment to the six-year term.
Jim, do you want to move that as well?
Absolutely. I will move Amy Guerreri's appointment for a six-year term the Tompkins County Personnel Commissioner.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Ready to vote? Or Mike Sigler?
Why 6 years as opposed to whatever?
It's required by both our charter and by state law. It's really to give, because this position is in part a county position, but it's also in part a state position. They administer the civil service system in this county on behalf of the state. So I think the genesis of these terms, and we have other commissioners with similar terms, is to provide a degree of buffering and protection for the person who's in that, an independent person that's in that job on behalf, working on behalf of the state.
What is it now?
Is it what?
What's the term now?
Six. It's six. It's a standard 6 year term.
Oh, so it's just for kind of re-stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? I'm ready to vote on the motion to for the six-year term. Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Again, unanimous. Thank you. I have some questions. Martha had her hand up first, then Carol.
Amy's moving her chair like she wants to say something. Could she? No, I would, and I would like.
We're happy to hear from Amy if she'd like to speak to us. Please come to the podium.
But I don't want to interrupt Carol's question.
Oh, that's all right. Come on. we'll get to Carol's question here in a second.
Well, I just wanted to express my deep appreciation for the hard work of the selection committee. They really did an impressive job of carefully, you know, selecting and vetting out candidates. And I'm so honored to have been chosen for the position. I'm very excited to get started and very enthusiastic at the prospect of working with all of you, working with the employees and the community, and serving Tompkins County to the best of my ability. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy. Carol?
Well, I thought about asking, does she have to commit the same amount of time to us? But that's not my question. If it's a standard term, why do we vote? Is there a choice? If you, I mean, I'm happy to commit the 6 years, but do we have the option to increase it or decrease it? I'm not getting.
I don't believe you do. I think it is.
You know, it's the 6 year. I mean, it's in our charter, but it comes from state civil service. Our commissioner of personnel serves as the state civil service area civil service officer for the county, and under state law, it has to be a 6 year term. I think probably we do it separately because we probably send the six-year appointment to the state civil service, which they're more concerned about that part than the just general being commissioner of personnel.
That is our procedure. I see Kathy Covert nodding.
Okay.
Carol, or Martha?
Yeah, we have a couple of positions. I think commissioner of social services, health commissioner. Similar terms like that.
Just those two, and for the same reason, because they really are, they do work on behalf of the state in this county.
Anything else for Joe? Thank you, Joe. Go to the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Any questions for Jonathan? Go to our finance director, Rick Snyder.
Good evening. I just wanted to bring to you tonight an update on the foreclosed properties that are scheduled for auction. I handed out, should be in your vicinity, close to your red packet, a sheet that has a small spreadsheet on the back and a narrative on the front. If you would compare this to one that we shared with you last month, you'll see that the spreadsheet is much shorter. And that is good because we have gone from approximately 34 properties down to now we have 23 properties. Those are a result of a number of redemptions and a number of instances where the property owner has come in and has filed and obtained installment agreements. I wanted to let you know that the auction will take place on June 22nd this year. It's in a different location. It's at the space at Green Star at 700 West Buffalo Street in Ithaca. That should be a prime location, a good spot for us, a very large room. And I wanted to bring all these properties to your attention because there are still just a couple more that within the next day or two may be redeemed or may sell. We had two of these properties that they've been telling us the check is in the mail, or we'll be in there today, or we'll be in there tomorrow. So there are two properties that are still scheduled to sell, but my hopes of that happening have diminished since 2 weeks ago when they were telling me the exact same thing. So as it is right now, we're down to these properties where we have 11 residential properties and 12 vacant or commercial parcels. The planning department shared their 2015 foreclosure report with both the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee on May 20th, and then with the Government Operations Committee on May 26th. The report contained recommendations of which parcels should be withheld from the sale. As a result, the GO Committee took action to withhold one parcel from the foreclosure auction in order to pursue a sale which supports the conservation of that site. The Planning Department is dealing with the Town of Carolyn and local conservation partners regarding potential future ownership of that site. So we did remove one parcel from the list for conservation purposes. The last paragraph is simply a section. Although it is not our auction, there's a section I wanted you to be familiar with on the City of Ithaca foreclosure and auction. The Government Operations Committee also took action on this particular item. The City of Ithaca proposed to retain and remediate the site of a certain parcel located at the base of Ithaca Falls on the north side of Fall Creek at Lake Street. To conserve the parcel, the City of Ithaca has asked that the county waive past and future taxes on the parcel. The GO committee discussed this, and we talked about the amounts that are due in taxes. Those figures are in the narrative here. The committee voted to support the city's effort and to waive past and future taxes on the parcel and to remove the property from the tax rolls. So there you have it, the most recent update on this forthcoming auction for both the City of Ithaca and Tompkins County.
Questions for Rick? I have Kathy, then Jim.
It's just a comment. Thank you to Government Operations and for Rick and everybody who helped to preserve that really important Ithaca Falls property. And I know that my constituents are happy about that. And this is a case where the small amount of the taxes that are being foregone is greatly enhancing the quality of life in Tompkins County and in the city. Having that view shed free of who knows what could have been built there is priceless. So thank you.
Jim Dennis.
I'm a bit confused. I'm going to take Peter Stein's role about this. Who actually owns the property now? The City of Ithaca thing that we're looking at.
That's not part of our auction, so I don't have that information available.
A private owner.
Now it probably is the City of Ithaca.
The City of Ithaca has it. And so basically what they've asked us to do is to for them not to pay us $4,000 or some number like that.
True.
Past and future.
True.
Okay.
One time.
Am I correct in asking, are they going to own the property then? It will be theirs from this point on.
Dan, or did you want to speak?
So the idea is that pending common council vote tomorrow night, I believe, it will be withheld from auction, and the city will move over the next year to take possession of it and add it to their natural areas. That's my understanding.
So for them to take possession of it, someone has to pay something, right? A year from now?
I think that they're in arrears on their taxes now.
Right, I understand that.
We're waiving our portion of it, and the other municipalities will make their own decisions that are owed taxes.
So if the other municipalities don't do what we did, the county is responsible to pay the other municipalities. They're responsible to pay the school district, I think.
That is not my understanding. We are agreeing to waive the amount that is owed to the county.
And part of the motion was also to, and in the future, remove it from the tax rolls.
Okay.
So that would answer the future portion.
I mean, am I crazy here, John, or what?
No.
I mean, how can the school district be eliminated from that? It was always my impression if we did things that we have to make everyone whole. If you start doing, this kind of thing. But
I'm not sure if that's true of the city, though, right? It's true of the towns and the villages. I believe it's not true of the city.
I don't think it is.
Because they do their own foreclosure?
They do their own foreclosure.
Yeah, they do their own foreclosure. We do the sale, but they...
Okay.
So we're withdrawing it from the sale, not from really foreclosure. All right. I'd
like to go to Carol Chalk.
Yeah, my understanding from the announcements that I've seen has come out, there's a lot of discussion about this in the city, and from our own representatives, that the idea is for this to become natural land. And let me finish before you start shaking your head. And that what we want to appreciate about this, what I was going to say before your question came up, is that this is really one of the prime waterfalls in town that you can do in a drive-by. So for tourism purposes, for us, this is a place that you can bring your visitors, and that I almost always do bring visitors, on the way from viewing the lake to downtown to spend their dollars, or from downtown to spend dollars up to Lansing to spend dollars, or from there to the farmers market. It is one of the prime places that in the county, I think, that's worth preserving and have become public land, accessible and preserved from having a building put up in the future that would impede that view. And the city is deciding, whether and how to do that. And I would assume that it's like any other parkland or public space, municipally owned land that would be subject to taxes the same way, or not subject to taxes the same way other such land is. We don't question that. So,
Mike Sigler.
Thank you to the city for having the foresight to tackle this and find a way to do it.
I want to know, Jim, what you have against waterfalls. What do you have against waterfalls? I don't think Jim was arguing about the worth of the waterfall. I think he was arguing whether it's legal for us to do this or not.
Yeah.
And our lawyers say that it is.
So. Great. It's totally about the money.
I had a question, and that is, where does this $4,000 come from? Does it come from our fund balance, or do we take it from that fund that we have for protection of environmentally sensitive properties?
Are we paying it or waiving it?
Well, we're waiving it, but if we waive it, it means it won't be in our fund balance.
It's kind of like a tax abatement, though, isn't it? So it's a foregone.
But we did set up a special fund for this kind of thing, and I'm just wondering what was the plan.
All I can say is the discussion at the Government Operations Committee, that question was specifically asked, and the answer was no, we are not intending to transfer it from that fund. But if there's, I don't know the details of the financing of it, so if that's necessary, then I suppose that could happen.
Got Martha, then Dooley.
I want to go back to the school district tax issue. So that the city, so there are three entities that tax a parcel. So there's us and the city and the schools. Is the city going to be asking the school district to do the same thing?
I guess no one knows.
I wasn't at GEO, so I don't
know. Okay, or maybe the city will be paying the school district their taxes. But I got to say, there's a lot of conversation for $4,000. So
let me ask, instead of having folks that don't know the answer to some of these questions, if perhaps Dan and Jonathan could look into this for us and report back to us next meeting. Does that make sense to folks?
Yeah, if there are specific questions you would like answered, just let me know and I'll
try. Right, because the issue is, the school, 4,000, as I said, it's a lot of conversation for $4,000. Although that's our style, is the smaller the amount, the longer we talk about it. But that's one thing, but it starts to get maybe a little bit irritating if we're going to be asked to cover the school district taxes on behalf of the city.
We are not being asked that.
At this time.
So
let's get someone to.
Isn't this the end of our responsibility? I mean, this is it, right?
All right. All right. John wants to speak, and I want to see whether Dooley wanted to speak, too.
I did talk with planning about it today. I wasn't there at GO, and they do plan to do a resolution which would come to the board about the matter, so we'll have a full report at that time.
Covering school taxes, or
that would be nice.
The waiver of, I mean, there are two separate issues. There's one withdrawing it from the auction. That's one thing. That's really what we do. We just auction it. So they've asked us to withdraw it from the auction. That's fine. The issue of the money is a somewhat new one to me. So I gather they asked the GO, and I wasn't there, that we waive the money due, that they would have to pay the county. And I talked with planning today, and they said they'll put it in a resolution to come to this legislature, and we'll have an explanation at the time.
So. Sounds good. Thank you. Let's move on then. Ask for any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Will, you want to make a motion?
Yeah, Mike, I would like to move to reconsider the resolution reaffirming support for the single-payer approach to controlling health care costs and ensuring that everyone is covered, and urging the New York State Assembly and Senate to enact the New York Health Act.
On the motion to reconsider, Will can properly move this because he was not in attendance at the last meeting. He was excused at that point. Is there a second? Seconded by Carol Chalk, who was also not in attendance at the meeting. So we'll have an up or down vote on this. If there are eight votes yes, we will move to debate the resolution. All those in favor of reconsidering, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. It is to be reconsidered, so we will open discussion on the resolution. Will, do you want to say anything?
I want to thank the members of the community who brought this to our attention. As we know, we have twice before passed resolutions basically calling for the state to do something to create better coverage and curb costs. It is remarkable that this particular bill has passed the Assembly. My understanding is that it's never quite gotten that far before. What we are essentially doing is saying that we conceptually want something like this done. We would very much like the State Senate to take it seriously, and we here in Topsail County are expressing or reaffirming our support.
I want to mention, I forgot to count myself, there were actually 9 votes aye. Does anyone else like to speak? Jim Dennis.
Yeah, thank you. I was also, I removed myself from the last meeting for one reason or another. And I'm going to support this, but, you know, having done a little bit of research on single payer over the last many months, years possibly, and watching what New York State does as a government, you know, we've made requests to them over time to do little things like eliminate the Medicaid payment of there was a way they could cover that by increasing income taxes a small amount and relieve that terrible tax burden that every county has. We have sent other really strong messages to them to say, you know, do this. It will help us out. It will help taxpayers in the localities. And they've rejected us. And it is, you know, I don't want to use the word. It's a sort of a dream to believe that that New York State government is going to pick up the cost of this when they will not pick up the cost of other kinds of things that are absolutely have a dramatic impact on what every taxpayer pays for in Tompkins County. I will support this. We've supported these kind of resolutions before to the state, and you know they've stuck their finger in our eye, and I'm predicting they're going to do that again.
I was going to turn to Dooley. Dooley, do you have an amendment that you want to make?
I wanted to offer some language, which I hope you will find acceptable, just to bring this resolution up to date, because as we heard under privilege of the floor, the State Assembly actually passed the bill. And so on page 2 of the resolution being reconsidered, at the end of the whereases, I would like to insert a whereas that says, a whereas on May 19, 2015, the Tompkins County Legislature supported this resolution by a vote of 7-4 with 3 members excused, short of the necessary 8 votes to pass. And whereas on May 27, 2015, the New York State Assembly, by a vote of 92-52, passed A5062. Now, therefore, be it resolved. And the resolved, the second resolved, the word legislature would be replaced by Senate, since the Assembly has already acted. And there would be a similar change in the title of the resolution.
Is that friendly to the mover?
Well, they're both it's factual, and I would accept that.
That's friendly. Friendly to the seconder.
Julie, I don't really see a need to point out the part of this that is short of the necessary
eight votes
to pass.
No, it's not friendly.
That All part right. of it? It would be friendly without that one clause.
The reason for that is it doesn't make sense.
Julie, please move the amendment. See if there's a second.
I'll move the amendment. I'd like to explain why it's there.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion on the amendment, which is what...
It's there simply because it's being passed, I think, I'm hoping, under reconsideration, which explains why it's being reconsidered and changed to be updated.
On the amendment, ready to vote?
I think it's being...
I'm sorry?
I don't understand what she just said. That's not why it's being reconsidered.
Dooley, do you want to restate?
It's being reconsidered because it failed.
No.
Right now?
It's being reconsidered because we did not reach the 8-vote threshold.
Right.
It didn't fail. It won 7-4,
right,
but it's not sufficient. So it's filling in the details for the public. That's what it's doing.
No, it says right here, resolution to be reconsidered, defeated, resolution, da-da-da-da-da.
Yes, but we reconsidered it, Mike,
right.
And there were enough votes to reconsider. It was properly done at the next meeting.
I know.
And now we have a proposed amendment because the resolution is on the floor. So, Martha?
Carol, you either have to take out that whereas altogether or include short of the necessary 8 votes to pass. You have to explain why. So if it passed by 7-4, why did we... Why are we reconsidering it? The public doesn't know that we need 8 votes to pass something.
Yeah, well, my sense is that once this goes anywhere, we send it places, it's not going to say defeated on it. It's going to say, it's just going to be the resolution.
That's correct.
Why we have to point out that it was short of the amount needed to pass.
And
it had a
motion
majority.
To strike that whereas as,
At this point, we have Dooley's amendments on the floor.
You can make an amendment to
I was happy with the original, and I'm not going to vote against it either way. So,
ready to vote on Dooley's amendment.
To stick with the original.
All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Get your hands up there again, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Jim, are you voting?
Yeah, I'm voting no.
Voting no. All right, then that amendment does not pass.
I'd like
so to
write
back on the original.
It was defeated and not.
Martha Robertson.
I think it is important to make the other changes, so I'd like to move Dooley's amendments, except for that whereas on May 19th, et cetera. So,
second.
And moved and seconded. Does everyone understand what's happening?
Yes.
All right. We're ready to vote on Martha's amendment. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 3 opposed. The amendment's agreed to. Carol Chalk.
I just want to speak to the main motion. It wasn't.
Yes,
that.
We're back on the main motion.
The amount of back and forth on health bills, the time and effort that gets taken up with hospital and doctor's office staff and consumers is just insane. I've had way too many health bills in my life, and I follow them closely. They just go back and forth, sometimes 6, 7, 8 times. And I have friends who are doctors and family members who are doctors, but I have the friends who are doctors have gotten out or are getting out way too young. We need those doctors, and they're getting out because of the ridiculous nature of the billing system. We need this. We need the focus in healthcare to be back on healthcare. Anything that we can do to further that, I hope people will support.
Any other comments? Mike Sigler.
I'll be quick. I mean, I said pretty much everything I was going to say last time. If somebody actually did write me about this and asked me to change my vote, but my problems with our bill right here, it makes assumptions that I just don't even think are realistic. The fact that you're going to get $45 billion per year in savings, I don't know where that number's coming from. I don't see that happening. I think Jim stated it pretty well, that the state won't even pick up Medicaid. I mean, there is a battlefront that we could take and keep hitting them with it, because there's absolutely no reason this state should be charging us Medicaid when 48 other states don't. If we could get that done, then maybe we look at this. My other big problem with this is, and the person I wrote back to, I said, you're taking something that's so large and trying to push it through, whereas you could do this so much more where people would accept it more. Whereas if you were to take Medicare and say, listen, we're going to take it from age 65 to age 60, just do that little tweak. How much is that going to cost? And then you have a real number to work with. And then you say, hey, after 5 years, you know what? That worked out pretty well. We're going to move it down to 55. And then we'll move it down to 50. And you know what? People might even get on board with that. And they might actually say, wow, we were able to absorb that. If you did that back in 93, the age would be 45 right now. Then, here's another great thing you could do. We get rid of Medicaid, and you make Medicaid into Medicare. Then you don't have this two-tier system. And then you say, you know what? I see people would nod their heads at that, but you know what? A lot of seniors wouldn't, because a lot of seniors see that as, hey, I worked for that Medicare, and these Medicaid people didn't. But you know what? If you can't get over that hurdle, you're certainly not going to get over this. I see this as being a system that you're going to hurt the middle class, because what's going to happen is you're going to give everybody universal health care. My employer is going to say, you know what? Everybody's got universal health care. I don't have to give you insurance anymore. But my insurance is kind of crappy. So now I have to do what other countries do and go buy a whole other set of insurance. And now it's out of pocket. It's not out of my employer. A lot of countries do that. So those are my big hang-ups with this bill. Like I said, I just don't see these numbers coming out right. But
I'd like to get to a vote. Short Martha, short Kathy.
Hey, folks, I think we just heard Mike Sigler say he's for Medicare for all. Let's just call it a night.
Kathy?
I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Yes, ma'am. May we have a roll call vote? Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
9 ayes, 3 noes.
It's agreed to. Thank you. We'll move next to the consent agenda.
So he's back in the back for nothing.
We have some appointments on the consent agenda, or one appointment, out of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Christina Dravis. Also, we have some resolutions. If anyone wants it off the consent agenda, please say so. Resolution A is award of bids, aircraft rescue and firefighting truck, installed equipment, and personal protective equipment at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5636. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, resolution...
Off.
That's off. Resolution B. Resolution C, authorizing 2015 Federal Transit Administration grant for TCAT in Tompkins County. That's ID 5555. I believe that is the consent agenda. Someone want to move the consent agenda?
Move.
Leslie McBean Claiborne, seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Now we'll go to standing committees. Old Library Committee. Well, we had a meeting this morning of the Old Library Committee, and we had hoped to come to a recommendation in a resolution today, but we decided to wait for one more meeting. What we did do was, first we had an executive session with folks from Lifelong at their request. After that, we reviewed each of the three submittals that we have from the Franklin Group, from the Travis Hyde Group, and from the Cornerstone Group. And we went around, and certainly the committee members talked about their feelings and their after their review about these various proposals. Talked about the pluses and minuses of each one. We also heard from there were at least three other legislators there, and some of them joined in their opinions about things. In the end, we decided we'd wait, push over to the 9th. We will have another meeting, and I would really like to have a recommendation coming after that meeting to you on the 16th. Anybody that has questions, please review the proposals, review the website, which has the presentations made by the three proposers to us. Ask questions that you have. Can be of the county administrator, can be of Ed Marks at the planning department, can be of me or any of the members of the committee. Let's be fully informed about this when we vote on the 16th. Any questions I can answer? Carol Chalk.
Well, it's not a question. I want to thank, the committee members have, it became apparent. For those of us who hadn't been there for all of it, how many hours and how much work you've all put in. I want to thank Kathy Covert and Marcia Lynch for jumping right in when it became apparent after the meeting that the materials, the newer materials that were presented to the committee by the three final developers weren't so easy to find on our website, or some of them weren't there, are now there, not only there, but with explicit instructions about how to get to them. And for those who are looking, and I do encourage people to look not only at the proposals with the longer set of information, but at the shorter presentations that for all three of them, there's updated information and new pictures and changes to the proposals to each of those that are now available on our website. And for one, you need to go to the planning department, with the main link that's been on all along, and for the other, it's in the meeting portal. And then there are instructions now on the Planning Department website about how to click through in the meeting portal to get to those actual new materials. If you watch the video, there's a lot of information there, but it's not so easy to see the PowerPoints. So these are the PowerPoints with really easily readable information. Thanks also
Thank
to our developers who've hung with the public process for a long time.
That's important that folks know how to get to those. Martha Robertson.
There was an important executive session this morning at the beginning of the meeting. Will there be a way for other legislators to hear the content and be part of that exchange in executive session before they...
I'd be happy to talk with any of them about it.
I think it would be important for, the agency people who came and talked to the committee to actually talk directly to legislators as they make their decision. I went as a non-committee member and found their presentation compelling.
Let's think about how we could make something like that work.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thanks. Go to Public Safety Committee. Jim Dennis is the vice chair.
He is. All right.
In fairness, Nathan. Nathan being here, but he.
Nathan is otherwise dealing with issues at his place of work. I don't think we've had a meeting. When's the last? I can't remember when the last meeting was. I believe I was there, but.
I think it's.
The Public Safety Committee has
on the 18th.
No report.
The last meeting was on the 18th.
Yeah, I would. No.
All right. Anyone on the committee have anything to say about the Public Safety Committee meeting?
Yeah.
Nathan gave us a pretty thorough report at our last meeting.
Yeah, he did. And I would be willing to answer any questions. Not under oath, but clearly I would try.
Arthur Robertson has her hand up.
There was conversation. This came up at CJATI last week about the body camera policy and the city's initiative. And I just want to make sure anybody who was paying attention to that event that the city put together, that we've been assured that the county is working on that, but there are issues where the taser is the preferred vendor for the cameras, but there's an issue about storage, and there may be some opportunities of integrating the storage with our Spillman program. And Greg Potter and Brian Robinson and now maybe even all of Letts is getting involved in taking a little bit of extra time to make sure we figure out how to integrate it with Spillman, which can save personnel time, lots of time, and money on storage and indexing and all that stuff. So it's taking a little bit longer than the city's rollout, but we're going to have a better process. I'll just stick it out.
Jim Dennis?
Mike, I did receive one phone call from not a constituent, but a person asking me questions about the effect on some sort of criminal thing that might happen with a law enforcement person with a camera. In other words, how long would if something happened, how long would the video be kept, and would there be a charge for if there was a case involving it? And all those kinds of, I guess, policy questions, and how police departments literally run. And I had, I had no answer because I don't know what our policy is, and I don't know that we've established one yet. But clear, the committee and, people smarter than me about that will have to do that to be able to answer for the lawyers, I guess, those kinds.
Thanks, Jim. Let's move on. Leslie Bean Claiborne chairs our Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Yes, I do. And I'm having a Jim moment. I was at the committee meeting last week. We did a lot of things, and I don't remember what it was. It just blanked totally. What I do know is that we've began to roll out the information, the executive summary on the climate survey to our employees. That's been going over very well. And
we had a huge discussion on some issue that I just completely blanked on. Please help me.
We talked about training. That was one of the items on the agenda, and Jackie Thomas was there to talk about training activities and kind of present and future. And I can't remember if Jackie had another topic or...
Yes, Jackie actually came to talk about exit interviews.
Exit interviews, that's right.
See, it's not just me. Everybody else was missing. That's not what happened.
And it's such a similar
thing. It was. It,
is this thing going home?
I think so. I think it's time. You know, lunch, something, pizza. Call. Somebody call in. So we did talk about exit interviews. We had a long discussion. There's some homework that went back with Jackie to our personnel department, and we're thankful to have our new personnel commissioner. Who very soon will be racking her brain and getting her quite infused in WDIC efforts and work. So that's one of the things, because there are a lot of questions about what do you do with the information, if there are disclosures within that exit interview, people feeling like they were treated unfairly, what happens with that information, et cetera, and they didn't at the time want to make a complaint, or people feeling like if I say something now, would that come back to haunt me if I'm interested in different employment within the county. So we had a very long discussion on that. We were looking at a model out of Monroe County. Interesting enough, the Center for Dispute Settlement. And so we asked Jackie and the personnel department to sort of see what else is out there and for us to think of all the questions we ask and come back to us with a proposal that we can continue to massage some more to have something that will work for Tompkins County, because we do want to know what is happening with their employees when they leave, why are they leaving, even the ones who we might have terminated service. It's important, if they want to speak to us, it's of course voluntary, to hear what's been going on, or if employees are trying to switch from one department to another, is it just for upward mobility, comfort, whatever it is. So we want to have that information. So that's one area we had a lot of conversation around. We talked a little bit more just about employee recognition and continue to try to sort of tweak that. We started with the former commissioner, and I was hoping to move that along, and so we'll sort of get that jump started again. And there was another big issue. Joe has been gracious in helping to pull together for us what we call our diversity metrics. What we were getting in the past in terms of our diversity report is the EEO report that goes to the federal government, just based on those EEO guidelines and categories, but the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion wanted a little bit more information about who is working for us, in what categories, and so on. And so it was disappointing to us to you know, get that report from Joan. We know Civil Service certainly plays a big hand in this, to hear of the number of employees that we have onboarded, and not amongst them is... particularly, we look particularly at people of color, and not amongst that group was anybody of color. There's diversity definitely within the group, but we had nine or so employees. It was a relatively decent number. 20. Pardon?
20.
Okay, I'm lying, 20. In various categories, and not to have anybody of color represented in that group was something else. And so we wanted to sort of look back at our recruitment effort. We wanted to sort of look back at our employees really disclosing, or potential employees really disclosing. How are we keeping track of that information? Are department heads paying attention to this? And do we have a system that allow them to do that? So those were all of the things that we talked about, and we'll continue to have more conversation on there. One of the things that was, back to the training piece of it, was just really trying to define a good enough workshop, dialogue, training, series that our employees want to attend, things that will meet their needs in terms of employee development, and also understanding what are the parameters for people being able to attend those trainings. If employees are interested for development purposes, do department heads just say, no, you can't go? Then what else are they able to go to? So any number of things to sort of look through that. So those are some of the things we talked about. And from where I started, you've now gotten a whole lot from me.
Thank you. Good report, Leslie. We just had to prime the pump a little.
Yeah, I just went kaboodoo. Woo.
Any questions for Leslie? Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Kathy Luz Herrera is the vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met last on May 7th, and we will meet again on Thursday, June 4th. And we have a resolution, Resolution D, you see on your agenda, appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay, health department, pending the meeting, the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee action of today, and I so move.
I think we need a roll call vote on this one.
Short form.
Need a second.
Short form. I'm sorry. Who's the second? Leslin. Thank you. And let's call the short form roll call, please.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Questions for Kathy?
And that concludes my report.
Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. Beth and I have not met since our last legislature meeting, so I have no report.
Questions for Dave? Dave, I do want to mention that a number of people in my district, for one, have been very pleased with the work that's been done to repair Irish Settlement Road.
That's good to hear.
Let's go to the Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. It's handy to have the committee meeting the day before the legislature meeting. I remember we had a meeting yesterday. Woo! Before that, I did go at noon yesterday. We had the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council did present a workshop in downtown at the Cultivari. And there probably were like 90 people there. And I got to say, I know a lot of Ithaca faces, and I didn't recognize a lot of people there. So I think that was kind of not just the usual suspects, but some of the unusual suspects. So that was great. And they presented like the whole big picture of what the different opportunities are and some of the criteria. And then there was a breakout into three other subgroups. And all I want to say for anybody who didn't get there, you just need one thing, which is the phone number for TCAD. And just if you have any kind of idea on business development, a workforce idea, or, whatever might qualify, call Heather at TCAD. That's 273-0005. There's a way to fit almost any idea into some category. So the deadline for consolidated funding applications is July 31st. That's a very firm deadline. And although now I realize that, and then I went to the energy work group, and NYSERDA has some grant applications that go on longer. But to be part of the CFA process, July 31st, so you really should get to TCAD and talk to them about your idea as soon as possible. There's a lot of information on the Southern Tier Council website as well, so people, you can find that. Just kind of Google regional councils and go to Southern Tier. And Bonnie Palmer is the director there, and she's also available to help people with applications. So at the committee meeting yesterday, briefly, the first thing I'll talk about was the Arts and Culture Organizational Development Grants through the tourism program. We've had some conversation over the years about This is a particular kind of funding that goes to established arts and cultural organizations. There had been some little bit of controversy about it last year, about the grants and the criteria. This is for, you know, theaters and museums in town. And they had a task force, so we got a report yesterday from the task force that had worked very hard to really examine the criteria and examine, you know, do they want to change the policies. So they went through, you know, a very thoughtful process and reported on that to us. And if anybody has interest specifically in that, I'd be happy to talk to you later. Or you could call Tom Knipe or John Spence. The bigger topic of conversation, I would say from a time point of view, was about the a proposed Energy and Economic Development Task Force to be basically sort of run by TCAD but supported very strongly by Tompkins County government, by administration. So Joe put together a memo explaining what was going on and what the idea was. If you remember, was it November or December last year, Ed Marks and Michael Stamm had a joint press conference talking about sort of what about the county's vision and goals for economic development, job creation, and energy, progress on energy and greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And often those are in conflict. Ed and Michael worked very hard to come, you know, at Mike Lane's urging to come to an agreement on how to work together to find ways to make an energy transition that supports both those goals. So a fairly long process, 6 months of a work group working very hard on what does that actually mean, came to the committee yesterday. The work group consisted of Ed and Michael, as well as Katie Borghella from Planning, Joe, Charlie Troutman, Director of the Science Center, and Ed, Joe, I'm missing, was Katie and was it Martha Armstrong from
both.
TCAD?
Katie and Martha were both involved, as was Michael.
Okay. So we have a memo from the committee, from that work group, and a proposal to establish a task force of 14 members plus Charlie as the chair of this task force, Charlie being a voting, so it's a 15-member group, seeking to have balance among people who are involved in construction and business development, as well as people involved in local government and involved in energy issues and advocacy. So it will, and we didn't talk about individual names, I mean, that wasn't kind of the purpose yesterday, but the idea was to bring us up to date about where this initiative was going and what the goals were. We did have a resolution of support or a motion of support from the ED committee, although there was no formal resolution. But I'll just take a minute and read from Joe's memo about the goals. To establish a clear and common understanding of the near-term, next 5 years, and long-term technical and economic feasibility of various energy sources, systems, and strategies, develop a common understanding of the capacity of these alternatives to meet the energy needs of a growing economy, and to create methods for effective communication among business owners, developers, clean energy advocates, and municipalities on the topics of economic development and energy. The goal is for a series of meetings to culminate in late January next year, 2016, with a series of recommendations for county consideration. Also, to dovetail well with the energy roadmap that the Planning Department has been developing for about a year now, which also will be culminating around the same time and will certainly inform the work of this task force. So that together with, interestingly, the New York Prize application, the feasibility study for the microgrid that our planning department, well, they reported on, but it's also sort of being managed through the PEAK committee, but we heard a report yesterday from Ed. So that'll be around the same time that the feasibility study for the microgrid will also be sort of coming to completion. So it seems like a lot of things will be happening in the next 6 or 7 months on this topic. And I think just a lot of hard work to do and a real effort to try to bring different voices together to the table. So that's my summary. If Joe or Ed want to add anything, or if you have any questions, I'm happy to.
Questions for Martha. Dan Klein.
Martha, can you talk about who is going to appoint members to the task force and what's the time frame on that appointment?
I think I'll punt to Joe on that one.
Yeah, TCAD. So TCAD will be appointed. It really is a TCAD work group, so it will be appointing members. However, the members, a part of what the work group has been doing is to try to identify a good balanced mix of individuals to appoint to that group. So that's the process. I think you're going to find a very robust diversity of individuals around the table. Very different views and experience levels.
From Joe's memo, 7 members will be sought from the private sector, 7 from the public sector or not-for-profit / advocacy community. Care should be given to include members that represent city, town, and county governments, organizations or individuals with expertise in renewable energy or energy conservation, business and higher education, and energy suppliers.
And would we expect those appointments to happen over the next few weeks and that it would start meeting sometime in the next few weeks or a month or something like that?
And Michael Stamm and Ed Marks will be ex officio members, and we expect a lot of sort of content experts to come talk to the task force, not necessarily be members, but especially the energy roadmap, the people working on that to share information.
Thank you.
Other questions? Julie Kiefer.
Well, I'm very concerned about who gets to be on that group. And the legislature apparently has nothing to do with this. So how can any of us who care about details at that level be involved in helping make sure that the balance that is described so nicely is actually achieved?
I would suggest, make suggestions to Michael Stamm, you know, just call TCAD and say that, you know, you really want to see such and such a person to be on it. I think we really, I think we need to approach this with a spirit of trust, and this is not something that's been tried before, but it's an effort to really enable all voices to be heard, and you know, it's not, whatever comes out of it, I mean, any county action is obviously going to be decided by us here. So I think that it's certainly, Michael, I'm sure would be welcome to hear, would be glad to hear your suggestions for individuals, and I guess that's what I would suggest.
Anyone else?
It almost made it feel as though everything will be suspended until this group reports, and then we can start doing things. That's not the intent, I'm sure.
I don't think Ed would agree with that. Are you not doing things? I didn't actually mention that Ed and I went to the energy work group of the regional council. So the regional council's got these few different work groups going, and Ed and I both went last week to Binghamton for that meeting, and there's another meeting Thursday, and that is going like gangbusters. I mean, it's just a million ideas, and a lot of it comes from Tompkins County. What a surprise. Not just from us, but from others who went down there. So there's a lot going on, and this is just one group that's trying to do something a little different.
So we had expected to have Ed and Michael working together on something, and you said that both of them will be participants in this group, but not voting members. Mm-hmm. So is this the way that their working together is being played out? It's on this group?
I would be to say one thing. Maybe Ed wants to. You want to say anything on this, Ed?
You said this is TCAD's initiative. That's why I was asking.
This is not the only way we'll be working together. It's a way. I anticipate other things happening at the same time.
Good. Thank you.
Carol Chalk?
I just wanted to thank Ed and Mike Stan, Martha, Joe, all the people who have played a role in this. You know, this county has a real history, not just in my tenure, but going back decades of taking tough issues and, you know, appointing working groups and task forces and things like that to make sure that all sides get to tackle a problem together. And on this particular issue of energy and development, that hadn't been happening. You know, it seemed like people were talking past each other. So I want to, you know, I think this is a really good step, and I look forward to seeing what comes out of it. If I don't like what comes out of it, I'll be one of the first people in the door complaining. But I think they'll be able to come to something good. Thanks.
Yeah, there will be public input. There'll be information center sessions. Joe's memo says community roundtables and conversations. The task force will take a triple bottom line approach to its work and take environmental, social, and economic considerations into account as appropriate. And I really think this is. And this is like the conversation our country has to have. I mean, how do we grow to meet the needs of our community, and how do we, at the same time, not just stay even on greenhouse gas emissions and fuel use, but cut the use of energy and do even better, which I think those things aren't in conflict, but we have to be really concrete and practical about how to move forward. And this has got a 5-year focus, so this is like real-time stuff. So with that, the committee's next meeting is July 6th at 3:30.
Anything else? Let's go to our break at this point. Let's take 10 minutes and come back, and we'll finish up the agenda. Okay, we're back in session, and we're going to move next to the Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on May 26th, 1 week ago. We had a big discussion about the county apprenticeship policy. So we heard from people from the apprenticeship program at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Woo. We heard from Aurel Lamaro about some county history, construction projects the county's done and its relationship with apprenticeships. And we also heard from Jared Claiborne from Common Council about the city of Ithaca's experience with their apprenticeship policy. So it was a pretty wide-ranging discussion, but there was no proposal on the table. There is still no proposal on the table. I haven't heard of any coming, so at this point it was just a discussion and with no anticipated changes to our policy at this time. We received an update from Cornell about their hazardous waste site, which is just north of the airport. They monitor this on an ongoing basis and mitigate anything that's going on there, and they issue a report once a year. So we got that report. It is a public document. Anyone's welcome to look at it. There's basically, you know, there's always small changes year to year, but there was nothing that was reported that seemed alarming to me or anything that we need to take any kind of action on. We got a departmental update from Mike Hall, our airport manager. So one change that's going on at the airport is that taxi service, which previously had just been supplied by a single vendor, is now going to be open to all licensed taxis, at least licensed through the city of Ithaca. And plus the taxi pickup location has changed. I believe it's under a security camera now. And what else? Oh, he told us about a possible increase in the parking area for rental cars at the airport, that this would be a fairly large expansion, that if it were to happen, it's very probable that they could do the work in-house, which would be a good thing, save time and probably money. Let's see. Joe reported on Airport Day about the 5K run on the runway. There'll be a different security perimeter set up that day, so we're assured that the runners do not have to take their shoes off before they enter the race. And that concludes my report. Our next meeting is June 23rd, 3:30.
Questions for Dan? Will.
Dan, remind us what the source of the contamination or waste by the airport, where did it come from?
I don't know much of the history. I believe it was a radioactive waste dump of Cornell's from decades ago.
Okay.
If somebody knows more and they want to chime in.
There's also a chemical. There are two different sites.
Okay, thank you.
Cornell.
Thank you.
It has a half-life of 500 million years, though, right?
Yeah, it's a good long-term contract to get to monitor that thing.
Martha?
Are you going to do the 5K run in your stilts?
I am not a runner. I am not going to. The thought of running does not appeal to me. But the thought of running on the runway sounds fun.
Dan, would you, I believe you have resolution A to start out with.
Yeah, resolution E?
No, A.
A was on the consent agenda. No, B was pulled.
B, I'm sorry.
That's okay, but I do have resolution E, which is appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, information technology services department.
This is a short form roll call vote. Ready to vote? All those rather call the roll.
I'll second it.
Second.
So I moved it and duly seconded. Yeah.
Discussion.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
And he knows. That's unanimous. Now you want to do B?
We did B already, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. B is for peak.
I'm sorry?
B is for the planning.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was out of planning. I was thinking it was out of government operations. My confusion. Sorry.
No problem.
Anything else for Dan? All right, then let's go to planning. Maybe we can get it taken care of there. Dooley Kiefer's chair.
Yes, and I don't have a report, but I do have a resolution that's on the agenda and one that I pulled off the agenda. So which would you like me to do? B first?
Sure, do
so
B first.
So Ed could leave. That would be fine.
I'm dying to have B done.
B is called Acceptance of New York Prize Community Grid Competition Grant for Tompkins County Community Resiliency Microgrid Project and Related Budget Adjustments, ID 5640. I'll move what came out of the committee.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna.
I pulled it off only because it always needs another cheer in favor of it, but also that I wanted to be sure to add some dates to this resolution, which are indicative of how quickly this has been accomplished. So in the first whereas, I think there's a copy in your red folder. It would say, whereas on May 7th, 2015, the county applied for this. In the third whereas, it would say, whereas on March 20th, 2015, the county planning department issued a request for qualifications. And in the next whereas, it would say, whereas after evaluating responses to the RFQ, on April 6th, 2015, the county selected a team. So it's all happened very quickly, and those are the dates I would like to see added. Obviously, I consider them friendly, but I don't think...
Dave, would it be friendly to you to add those dates? All right. So that we'll be talking about Resolution B with those three dates inserted. Ready to vote on this. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you. And the other one is Resolution F, authorizing a public hearing on the Ag and Farmland Protection Plan, July 2015, and that's ID 5645. And I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Dan?
Do we need a date on that, or is it just July 2015?
That's the plan has that as part of its name.
I see.
I suppose it could be July 15 in front of it, if you'd rather, but I think that's where they have it.
Okay. Ready to vote?
Hold on. In the resolve, it says June 2015. In parentheses.
Well, thank you, Martha, for reading.
And Dan, the date of the hearing is July 7th. That's in the in that resolve.
Right.
Can we make those corrections?
Is it June or July in the name?
It's June.
June?
Yes. So that's a change that should be made. Thank you very much, Martha.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else, Julie? Okay, that's a no. We'll move to Charter Review Committee. We will meet on June 3rd at 3 o'clock p.m., and we will take up those parts of the charter dealing with the Office for the Aging, Workforce Development, and ITS. Any questions I can answer? Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you, Michael. We had a meeting at 4:30 today and passed a slew of resolutions, but some of the more important things were said to us by the county administrator. He has been thinking about and working with his with Kevin and talking about a new budget system. You know, over the time Joe has been here, he's talked about it in leadership meetings for sure, and then at other times. And he is thinking about a new budget system for the county as we move forward, not within the next 6 months, but clearly a discussion, and it's a thought that he's had in his head for a long time. And those of us on the legislature then dream up things to move that thought out, and he has to work on those kind of things. But it's clearly something on both of their radars. Second thing that I heard from Joe, or we heard from Joe, is that he wants to be able to present to us quarterly what the budget is looking like, budget projection kinds of things, and that would be a way for all of us to have a decent handle on what kind of money we were spending, where it was going, things like that. That obviously would be another addition to the kind of information we already have. And another thing Rick Snyder brought to us today was the beginning. He had a contingent account list and how we spent the money last year. And the 2014, we started out with $909,000, and we have $288,000 left in it. And it's a very interesting list of where the money has gone over that time. And I'm sure it's available. Did you pass one out to everyone, Rick?
I did not.
It's an interesting list I think everyone should take a look at to see how, you know, how we, in big numbers and small numbers, spend that money over a period of time. Let me just move to the resolutions that are on the agenda.
Let me just ask if there are any questions for Jim before you do that. Will?
Jim, can you tell us, Jim or Joe, just a little more about the new budget idea that Joe was bringing forth?
Yeah, and it still is just concept, but the budget that we produce now is, we think, a pretty good policy document. We think it has a lot of good information in it and presents it in a way that is understandable and that we can use as a basis of policy decisions. At the same time, what you don't see behind the scenes is a very complex, time-consuming process to get the numbers to that point. There's a lot of touches. There's a lot of movement of information from one system to the other. It takes a great deal of time to produce that document. What we'd like to do is to identify new software that can give you the same kind of information you're accustomed to receiving, but doesn't take so much behind-the-scenes work to get us to that point. So, I don't know that what we have is sustainable given the staff we have, but I do think that there are solutions out there, just computer solutions, that can help us develop that budget
in a, I don't want to ever call it push button, but a much more streamlined way than we currently do.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question, Mark.
Let's go to Dan.
Jim, when can we expect a schedule for budget public for hearings and such?
We have, Kevin and I, he's talking about the September-October schedule. I don't know. What are we saying?
I actually have a draft ready. It can go out at any time.
I thought we had a draft. And, you know.
I just wasn't sure if it was too early.
I didn't want to ruin your summer.
As soon as possible.
I get booked early.
Well, you know, I'm sure we can, you know, look at it more closely and figure out when to roll it out. But, you know, if you're looking, sometime in July, latter part of June, you know, I don't know.
I can send it out tomorrow, the first draft.
Well, then the phone calls go directly to her. good question. Yeah, we'll get it out.
Martha Robertson.
Yeah, just as long as we're not kind of held to things that we say or don't say at this early date. And Amy behind you, Joe, was nodding like vigorously about the software idea. So check in with her later. Maybe she has something from Yates County.
I will.
Carol Chock.
Oh, I was just wanting to weigh in favor of having the schedule as soon as possible so that if there are dates that people know they can't do it, they can weigh in as soon as possible.
What? I mean, just let me say to all of you who've been here for more than 20 minutes, there are days that we try to schedule free of committee meetings, free of other kinds of things, where we know there's an immediate conflict. And, you know, that the only thing I can say to you from my point of view is that we put them out and look for to do the least amount of damage and get the most amount of people there. I will never say out loud, or nor will anyone, well, maybe on occasion, you should be at all the meetings. If you can't be, you can't be. That's the way the game is played.
Amen.
And that's how it is. The Ithaca Journal has another view, but, you know, that's not my view.
Preach it, brother. Preach it.
I don't know. I mean, I will just say we're not going to get into the business of, you know, if two people say I can't make the meeting, that we're going to switch it if 10 people can make it. That's not going to happen. You know, we will do the very best we can to make sure we get the most people all the time.
Jim, I just enjoy the process so much that I want to make sure to structure my whole fall about around being able to be there.
I appreciate
that comment.
You all
heard her.
And I think we're talking about maybe 8 meetings, right? You know, except when you count them up, 8, 9 meetings, and then maybe a public hearing, and then a public forum when 5 people from the city come and tell us what we're doing wrong. You know, so. I'll do my best.
What dates can I be there? You know, those are when you
thanks, Jim. Can we go to your resolutions next?
If I don't, you know, find a new chair of the committee. The money's not good anyway. But let me get on with my two lovely resolutions. The first one is G, and it is authorizing a public hearing on a proposed local law. A local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2016, and I would move that.
Second. Seconded by Kathy Lewis Herrera. Discussion. Dooley.
Based on a recent discussion, I wonder if we should have another resolve authorizing the Department of Administration to place additional public notices in such local news publications as it deems necessary.
Dooley, I have no idea what that means. The same resolution we passed for the last 3 years.
And we will put it in the Ithaca Journal. The question is, should there be additional public notices of this in a Shopper, a Penny Saver,
Joe,
whatever.
Joe, you want to respond?
Yeah, I can speak to this. We talked about this in GEO, and GEO endorsed the idea of, for public hearings and public bids, two things that we want to engage the public on, we ought to put the notices in a second publication beyond the Ithaca Journal. So we will be putting these notices in the 9 community newspapers, the Finger Lake community newspapers, in addition to the Ithaca Journal to try to encourage people to attend these meetings. So that's just something that we have done administratively now to alert people that public hearings and public bids, we will do that.
But since GEO just okayed the concept, but the legislature hasn't acted on it, I thought maybe it should be reflected in this resolution.
Well, it's something that we can do. I'm convinced we can do this with existing cash. We're only talking for all these public hearings and public bids. I think it's $1,500 over the course of the year. So I've simply, based on the conversation in GEO, advised department heads, this is what we will do over the course of 2015.
And then
so they know to do this.
Yeah. And budget report in 2016.
Right. And then, for 2016, we'll have a chance to look at policy and see if that should be extended.
Okay. This reminds me of the fact that at planning, at Peak, and then at GEO, we supported the idea of giving up $4,000 to help save the Ithaca Falls natural area. But again, that's not an action by the legislature. And it felt funny that a committee alone can make that decision, and I think it feels funny that a committee alone can make this decision. I would feel a lot better if the legislature had gotten a chance to weigh in, and that's what prompted my suggestion.
Martha,
why are we talking about?
Joe, do you remember how much it cost to add the second paper for those things?
For those annualized, for bids and hearings, was it $1,400 or $1,500?
I would point out that the legislature routinely, committees get notice of budget changes that don't need our approval if they're under $5,000.
Right.
So staff just does that stuff and they tell us about it.
But that's okay. There are other equally valuable publications that would bring it up considerably.
Okay. Can we move to a vote on this? Let's remind that this is scheduling a local law on the overriding of the tax levy limit, if necessary. And that's what we're talking about, not really about the newspaper issue.
That's a result.
Kathy?
Thank you. We had a discussion at the committee meeting how some of us in the past have had concerns about doing this so soon, and yet time has shown that doing this really provides us with lots of options in case of unforetold circumstances that come forth from the state, from our grants that sometimes don't get reconciled until later in the budget season. And I've come to understand that this is a smart thing to do right now. And that's why I supported it and will continue to support it until the situation changes, which could be 2 or 3 months from now, for all we know, depending on what the state does. But for now, it seems like a really good thing to do.
I would point out that last year we repealed the resolution. We had it there if we needed it. And that's what I think the Budget Committee is offering to us again this year. Ready to vote? I'm going to call for a roll call, please.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
That's adopted. We'll have the public hearing on the next meeting?
No,
July 7th. Okay. Jim, you have
I have one more. Establishment H, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budget units for the preparation of the 2016 budget. And I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Mm. Discussion. Carol Chalk.
So I'm sorry that I had to miss the budget retreat, you know, where the case was laid out for why our general target was somehow at 1.3% to stay within the tax cap, and then this number that we've got before us gets adjusted accordingly in most years. And I've asked two different people, and I've gotten two explanations. I think they were the same explanation of how our 2% tax cap amount somehow only became 1.3%. And I just didn't, I don't understand, and if I can't understand it, I'm not sure the public can understand it. So I'm hoping that, maybe we can hear a little bit more.
So the 2% cap is a fiction. It's a starting point. It always has been. So we've had caps that bump 4%. We've had caps that are lower than 2%. This looks to be one of the years that the cap will be lower than 2% because the cap is 2% or inflation, whichever is lower. And then there's adjustments on top of that. So if there is real growth in our tax base, not just inflationary growth of values, but new lumber, we get credit for that. So that brings our cap up. What's the other factor? There are sales tax adjustments, so the amount of money we give to the towns, villages, somehow that gets factored in. And there's a carry forward, as Rick says. So last year we didn't spend up to our cap, so we can carry that forward. So it's much more complex than the 2% cap that's often advertised. Based on the fact that inflation is zero right now, that lowers the cap. So we don't start at two. We start at inflation at zero at this point. And then we adjusted it for the expected amount of new lumber in the tax base based on historical averages and the carry forward from last year. So that arithmetic led us to a projection, and it's just the first one, of the cap for next year at 1.3%. So in looking at that and explaining what that 1.3% would allow us to do for 2016 at the retreat, we decided that's a good starting point. Let's try to keep, so we set a tax levy increase goal of 1.3%, and that legislation was passed two meetings ago. From that point forward, the arithmetic just kind of flows. It means that with that increase in the levy, we can afford to allow the departments to be held harmless instead of cutting them as we have in the past. We can afford to provide a 2% cost of living increase to our sponsored agencies. So we can do that, and as we said in retreat, still have the capacity to address some of the things that we need to do to help strengthen the county's operation. So there's still money that will be available for that, all within the 1.3. So first step was two meetings ago. The 1.3% became the tax levy goal increase based on the estimate of the tax cap. Today is to translate that into spending targets, and that's what you're doing. Departments flat, agencies up 2%. So that's how we build the budget. Does that answer the question?
Well, not really, but I understand that we start at 2% and then it gets adjusted, and I understand the other adjustments. A lot of the reason that this year we went down to the 1.3, which sets this number for the agencies at 2%, is because the inflation was at zero. But if you start at 2%,
start at zero.
You adjust for inflation.
You start at zero.
2%.
Yeah. No, you start at zero. And then you build up. You build up from that. You build in the new lumber. You build in these other adjustments. And when we did that, we brought the estimate to 1.3%.
So did we have no new lumber, net new lumber this year?
That's what I said. So we looked at the historical average new lumber factor, and we added that in. We added in the amount that we didn't spend last year. We didn't spend up to our cap. We added that in. And when you add those things up, starting at the zero base, you bring it to 1.3%. Now, that could change over the course of the season as we get better information. Maybe inflation will come back a bit. But that's our best estimate going into it at 1.3.
Well, this is fine for the governor to order for us, but this is not the number that I think that we're comfortable with in our county, and that our agencies, we keep hearing how they're hurting, and they do important work, and they've had many, many years of not being able to get back up, and I really, now that, you know, the economy's doing so well, the Dow's way up, it just seems to me we ought to be able to do better than this.
Martha?
A little off topic, but the legislature has a couple more weeks. Do you, and I know making the tax cap permanent is on the agenda. Have you followed this? I don't know.
I'm talking about in Albany.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so is there, do you have any sense of where it's going to go?
I think it'll be permanent. I think there'll be trade-offs made, but I think it'll be permanent, and I don't expect to see any changes in the formula that calculates the cap. There was some talk about allowing other exceptions in, a capital exception, for example, that you might build in. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I guess the relief factor is the circuit breaker, which I talked about ad nauseum earlier. I don't know that that has legs anymore. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think there will be a permanent cap.
All right. Ready to vote on this one? I'm going to ask for a roll call on this one as well.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Jock?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes, of course.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes, although I agree with everything Carol postulated.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 1 no.
It's agreed to.
I would like to request that the minutes reflect that my no vote was because I thought that the number should be higher.
All right.
Mike, one more thing, and then I will be finished. In the description of all the people that got involved in the Ithaca Festival parade, maybe I was not listening, which I will do sometimes, not listen. I didn't hear Marsha's name mentioned, and she was one of the main perpetrators of getting everyone in place down there behind the big truck and the solid waste, who did a great job in the airport. So thank you, Marsha, for that. And
speaking of Marsha Lynch, our public information director.
Yeah. And for those of you who didn't know, Dan Klein was just amazing walking up and down the street in his stilts. So, you know, we're all going to try that next year, but not wait. Anyway, that concludes my report. Thank you all.
Thank you, Jim. Can we take, take the minutes of the previous meeting, Mike, May 19th.
Mike, excuse me, before we leave the subject of the budget, I would like to encourage all the program committees to have the departments that they oversee share with them what they would really like to have if they could have their druthers in terms of how the cuts have affected them, and think big, look toward the future, because only if we understand the details of the departments that we are supposed to know about will we be able to consider any over-target requests that may actually creep into the budget.
Julie, no. Is there someone want to move the minutes, please? Dan Klein, seconded by Glenn Morey. Ready to vote on the minutes?
Yeah.
Dooley?
Yeah. As I read Privilege of the Floor for the Public and Rebecca Elgee, who spoke again tonight, I didn't think it was clear what she was necessarily talking about. I looked at my notes, and I would like to suggest a change to what the way she has summarized. I'll just read you what I have. You can accept it or not. Rebecca Elgee, City of Ithaca, encouraged the legislature to reaffirm the New York Health Act, which is a single-payer law for New York State. She said Tompkins County supported the single-payer approach a few years ago, and there is now a campaign that is moving the bill ahead. There is a promise of support from the Speaker of the Assembly to bring the bill forward.
Julie, may I say that I think the proper procedure there would be for you to submit that and that to be added to the notes as a correction to the notes?
Well, this is our official record. That's why I was suggesting it for the minutes. I can certainly do it for the notes, but nobody looks at the notes.
So you're moving that as an amendment?
I'm moving it as an amendment.
Is there a second? Seeing none, ready to vote on the minutes?
I'm sorry. What did you want to add?
I think it will go down in flames. Never mind, Carol.
Can we vote on the minutes? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Unfinished business. When I talked to you earlier about the Zodiac game, what I missed in telling you about the Magistrates Association, it was pretty important. They had a very interesting speaker, Bill Leahy, who is the assigned indigent representation. Joe, give me the exact title of the man.
He's the director of the Office of Indigent Legal Defense.
And he talked about particularly the assignment of counsel at arraignment and that coming out of the court decisions that are saying that we have to provide those for people who can't afford lawyers, but at arraignments. And he spoke very, very highly of the fact that Tompkins County was the first county in the state to do that countywide. And I think that was pretty impressive. I think there's another state, I think another county, Monroe, is now going that direction. He also spoke very highly of our representative on his board, who is, of course, our county administrator. I wanted to mention that. Martha?
Yeah, this has been a topic at ABIR, Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, which I am a liaison to. And we got a three-year grant to cover the extra costs, and people are really excited about how well it's working. So there's going to be a report to public safety soon.
He mentioned that we were doing this for $39,000 a year, and he was just totally amazed that we could provide that service for that kind of reasonable cost. Carol?
Since you reopened the question of the magistrates, there was something that we had an ongoing conversation with the magistrates about, or trying to have a conversation. It was about removing the backlog.
The
waiting times to come to trial.
How did they do with setting bail?
It had to do with the return of bail monies to OAR is all I remember. The ongoing conversation, and Jonathan has waiting and written letters.
I was just wondering where that, if having just partied with them, whether you could bring whatever
that,
question that
issue
was.
Didn't come up. Yeah. I can't.
No, but it's whether that's. It's
anything else on unfinished business?
Yes. Just Leslie. Very quickly, I passed around at the end of my report a notice for the presentations to the various departments on the back of it on the climate survey results. Are the So if anybody wants to comment and sit in on any of those, you are welcome to. So all the dates are on the back of that flyer now. I just want to make sure that you are aware of that.
Thank you. Are we ready to adjourn? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Dave, seconded by Jim. All those in favor of adjournment?
Out of here.
Thank you all. Good meeting.